Good morning, everyone. Thank you very, very much for the invitation. Very happy to be here. Beautiful gardens, although the timing is not very good. But
this is the time of year that we are not distracted by.
Yeah, by the beauty of nature. All right. Thanks very much. A few words about me. My name is Dimitris Kyrias. I'm the crazy person that a few years ago I came up with the idea that we need a research infrastructure in Europe for natural science collections, and here we are now, 5 years later, almost, having DISCO on the roadmap. So let me start with the good news, and I think this is important. Natural science collections, for the first time in their history, are recognized, at least at the European level, and especially at the European Union level, as a priority research infrastructure for the achievements of the objectives of the European research area. Now, this is a major fit, because basically what it does, it puts the collections and the collections information and the collections expertise at the very center on what we want to develop within the context of Europe to achieve the objectives of science and society in the future. And there are very few infrastructures that have this privilege today in Europe. So that's the good news. So now I go downhill from here. It is my understanding that you had this presentation yesterday, so I'm not let's see how boring this can get. But the reason why a few years ago we said we really want to unify digitally all the museums in Europe is because Europe holds a privileged position in the world in terms of how they represent not only natural science collections, but also expertise around them. We have approximately 1.5 billion specimens sitting around across hundreds of locations in Europe, and we have more than 5,000 full-time scientists working on those collections. We have 25,000 people moving from one country to another every year in Europe just to access those collections, and 800,000 specimens shipped around for the same purpose. That comes at an annual cost of 70 million euros per year. So it is, just to give you an idea, CERN, one of the largest infrastructures that we have for science today in the world, has 5,000 scientific users every year. So, of course, we are highly distributed, and this is the major problem. So this is what we are trying to address with DISCO, essentially. So why do we bring this notion of the need of a research infrastructure in Europe? Specimens for us, I think for the scientific purposes at least, are nothing more but containers of information. They're basically containers of data. What we are trying to do for hundreds of years is basically extract that information in one way or another, either physically study them or applying techniques to extract more data from genomic information to biochemical data and ecological information and everything in between. So basically what we've been doing as scientists, first and most of all interacting with those collections, is extracting that data and then basically using that information to do our science. Now, this, we've been doing this in a quite effective way, but not at the scale and rate that we really need in order to get the information we want. And essential in actually linking all of that information together, at least from the collections perspective, is the specimen itself. The specimen is the anchor point, is the reference point through which we can start reconnecting all the pieces of knowledge that we've been extracting and is deposited across several repositories and aggregators across the world. You can see aggregators already operating in any of those data types already globally, from ENA and GeneBank and DDBJ, from genomic data to biochemical information to taxonomic data, catalog of life, and so on and so forth. So there are specific infrastructures, global infrastructures, that today do aggregate this information. So the major challenge is to see how we can reunite that information by using the specimens at the very center of it. And the problem is that these connections that are there in blue basically are not self-evident. Sometimes they are just lost, broken, not there in the first place. So you have thousands of accessions within ENA today that came from sequences, that came from specimens, that actually there is no way of linking back to the specimen that they came from. And if you don't have a way of connecting the sequences back to the specimens, then you don't have a way of connecting the sequences to the taxonomic information, probably. Or the sequences to the collections. Or to geography. So basically, specimens become a very important central point on how we would like to reunite this information. We would call all of this an extended specimen, basically a digital specimen that includes all the knowledge that specimen has produced in terms of digitization. So basically what we're looking for is the transformation of the physical world into its digital surrogate. Think of this physical container of data becoming a digital container of data. And that is very important. This is the physical container also has a value on its own as a holistic value, right? What it represents altogether. And this is exactly what we would like to achieve in the digital world. Not only aggregate information, but transform that digital unit into an actionable knowledge unit. And by actionable, I don't only mean from a human point of view, but predominantly from a machine point of view. And what's even more exciting is that the physical curation of our data, of our collections, is extremely problematic today. We have all of this experience with museums in the world, and the most evident thing I see is that the taxonomic expertise within our museums is falling and falling and falling in terms of the coverage of it. Most of our museums have specimens that span across the tree of life. How many of those museums have experts that cross the tree of life? No, so basically you need experts to be moving or specimens to be moving to do that curation, that needed curation, that extraction of knowledge. And we cannot continue doing this on a physical basis. And the only mechanism to do that effectively is you shift basically that curation space. Not just the aggregation of information, the curation space from the physical world to the digital world. So think of a systems or system of systems, basically, that allow annotation, curation of that information digitally. And the authoritative version of that specimen stops gradually being the physical object and becomes the digital object, the digital specimen. Now, I started very technically a bit, but basically, DISCO, of course, is not only about the technical aspects of how we want to achieve. DISCO is not, and I'm emphasizing this, is not an aggregator of information, is not a portal, is basically the museums themselves joining forces to transform into a unified entity, digital entity. The same way we've seen this kind of join of forces at national level. So I think this is very important because many times we get these questions, what is the end point, what do you want to build? Essentially what we are building is a new organization, a European organization that represents the whole of the museums, their collections and their expertise in the world. And we have achieved to build the largest ever formal agreement with, and by formal I mean with a series of contractual agreements as well, of natural history museums in the world. 120 museums across 21 European countries at this point have joined forces. And on the right hand side is exactly what I was referring to before. This is all about delivering a one European collection of scientific assets with common collections development strategy. The way we've been developing collections up to now has been basically on the gaps or the needs or the priorities that we see at institutional level. And if we are lucky, at national level. But this is not how we should be developing collections. If collections is one asset, one global asset, then we need to see the gaps at that global level. And then we can develop specialization strategies through which the collections, our facilities, can really fill those gaps looking at the global, of course, first at the European, and hopefully at the global scale of what we need. And we need to build these economies of scope and scale, as I usually say. We can achieve way more together, even with no additional funding, if we really share the responsibility, develop the right commons and common policies. This cannot, the next one cannot be more important. If we do not very, very quickly develop mechanisms through which we can monitor the use and impact of our collections, not as a whole, but at a specimen level, it would be extremely important to gradually understand how we need to continue curating and developing those collections. In the Natural History Museum in London, when I used to work, I asked one question a few years ago, and I said, I used to be a botanist. So I said, in the botanical collections, I think the botanical collections in London are approximately 3.5, 4 million specimens. I said, how many of them, to your experience as curators, have been seen by human eye in the last 20 or 30 years? You know what the response was? I mean, it was like this, of course, but it was approximately 10%. Around 50 or 60% of every single specimen, at least in the botanical world, and I'm sure it's the same in others, deposited in that collection has never been seen by anyone since the day it was accessioned. Anyone. Some of them are lying there for hundreds of years. So how can we really understand where we need to invest? Which parts of the collections? How we need to develop them further if we don't know how they are specifically used at the level of granularity that they are curated, which is the specimen. So this is a very simplified thing, but basically it summarizes what I said up to now. We need to move away from this slow, expensive, inefficient, and limited way of accessing information from the collections, which is mostly predicated on moving around people and specimens, into a system that actually allows users to interact with the whole corpus of knowledge that collections provide in a much more efficient way. And of course do that not only for humans, but also for machines that allow interaction with other research infrastructures, at least in a European scale. Now, let's see how others see DISCO. Collections for the European, at least, landscape of research infrastructures are positioned at the very bottom, at the foundation level of the construct of research infrastructures in Europe. Basically, they are seen as providers of reference data that are essential for not only the operation, but also the interoperation of all the research infrastructures that sit on top, that do analysis of information and production of knowledge. And you can see some examples of other research European research infrastructures, either in development, like LTR, or already operational, like LifeWatch. And this is not our view. This is the view of the wider community. So how would DISCO look like by 2025? You know, when I started this, I said 2025, oh my God, that's too far away, isn't it? Now it feels like not too far away anymore, so something is missing there. I think... Yeah, so here it says physical and remote access services. But they're very remote for you. All right, so basically there are three categories of services: the e-science services, one-stop shop for services providing discovery, access, interpretation, and analysis of complex and linked data. By linked data, I refer to that construct before I was describing around specimens. A universal harmonized physical, of course we don't anticipate that the need for physical access will cease in the next few years. But basically what we need is to start complement physical access with digital access and remote access. And by remote access here, I refer to what we call digitization on demand. So a demand-driven digitization of our collections, not a blank sheet digitization process where it just goes through backlog. And of course, most of our museums are not doing that anymore. I come now from an organization that did that. which was fantastic, but not all the museums, naturalis, but not all the museums can actually go through the whole backlog of specimens and just digitizing. So they need some kind of a prioritization mechanism. So how many of you are familiar with Synthesis Project, for instance? Okay, Synthesis is an access. Is an access project, of course. Just to give you an idea, Synthesis has been running for 14 years. For 14 years, the Commission has been funding us to move around people and specimens. And they will continue to do this so for the next 3 years. After that, they said, guys, we've been doing that for 17 years. I think it's about time you pick it up yourself. If you really think it's important, you do it. And of course, what they expect is the research infrastructure to continue doing that. And of course, and I think you all agree with me, support and training services are essential. It's so prominent, the value of that aspect of the work, that I won't even talk about it. So where we are? We started back in 2014, 2015, we started more intensively to prepare ourselves for getting the research infrastructure into the European roadmap of research infrastructures. After four years of intense work, we, in 2018, was a very big milestone where, as I said before, European collections entered that roadmap. This is a very privileged club of research infrastructures, basically, and we are in it at this point. So what we're doing right now is preparing ourselves to go into construction phase. What does it mean? We call this the improving our implementation readiness level. So basically, we're preparing to be able to implement. If we were building a building, which we're not, but if, basically what we would be doing now is the design of the building. Is basically putting everything together, finding the contractors, putting all the blueprints, the architects, everything together to be able to construct. So basically say to the contractor, this is your package, you have 3 years, I know you're going to be delivering in 6, but go ahead. And that point for us is basically not 2020. Unfortunately, I think this is an odd slide. We're moving the date as you understand it now and then. It's basically around 2023, so move it 3 years. And then we go at the construction phase. In the preparatory phase, basically the implementation readiness level includes several other dimensions, so data readiness, scientific readiness, financial readiness, and legal operational readiness. And then we go into construction. This will be a short period because theoretically you have everything designed already. Of course, it will not be. And then we go into a transition phase where basically we're setting up our new legal entity. This will be a European legal entity. It is very probable, although we haven't decided yet, and it's part of the design or the preparation phase, it is very probable that this will be an ERIC, a European Research Infrastructure Consortium. This kind of legal entities have basically the benefit that they operate on a legal status across all the European Union and associated countries without the need of national legal law implementing that. And they also have some tax breaks and other benefits. That we expect to be fully in place by later than 2025, a bit later than 2025. But, despite the fact that we are still very early in this process, we are already developing some, let's say, precursor services which we think are important for our community. You might have heard of that. One of the first services that's coming out in the next year, it's called ELVIS. I don't know if you see the pattern there. ELVIS, the European Loans and Visit System. Now, the beauty of that is the domain name, which will be elvis.disco.eu. And I think ELVIS wouldn't be very happy about it. But in any case, the European Loans and Visits System is going to basically provide a holistic framework through which we were going to track and facilitate all the loans and visits across our museums in Europe in a way that not only facilitates the process of the loan and visit, but also tracks the outputs of this. creating profiles of people, expertise, and so on and so forth. And this will be completely plugged into the data object, digital object architecture of DISCO that we're also developing. So how do we do all of this? At this point, we're doing all of that using a very complex program of projects. This program includes several projects. Some of them, we call them DISCO-linked projects because they are very much embedded within and purposed for DISCO, like ISDIC synthesis, mobilizing DISCO prepare. Some of them we call DISCO-associated projects, like Envry Fair or Catalog of Life Plus, that are very linked to us, but we are not really directing them. I'm sure that some of you might have heard at least one of those projects. Or you probably, some of you participate, and I know that. What we are doing through all of these projects is basically ensuring that the deliverables of those projects contribute into a very complex program, and they operate as pieces of a puzzle. So basically, we use European Commission sources funding, because all of those are funded by, except from Catalog of Life Plus, are funded by the European Commission, ensuring that all of those projects, they account approximately to 21 million euros for the next 3 years. We contract approximately 200 people at this point. So more than 200 people across Europe are working on one way or another in DISCO. So that's quite a big coordination overhead, and this is why we have established a body which is called the DISCO Coordination and Support Office, the CSO, that makes sure that all of those projects and all of those activities are coordinated centrally. And of course, your next question would be, all right, the Commission now is funding you, is giving you 20 million for this in one way or another. How is this going to continue? So this is a very interesting slide, because the dates here are corrected. But this is basically the funding flows and the transition of funding. So as you can see, early on, the funding was coming predominantly from the institutions themselves. So our museum said, this is important and we will pay for it to happen. So they paid for my salary, they paid for other people's salary, making sure that we are progressing into this. I will skip the final one, which is the operational phase, transition and operational phase. That you will see that basically what we expect is national level funding. So the countries themselves commit to the operation of the research infrastructure. Just to put DISCO on the roadmap, we have to have a commitment of at least 3 countries in place. We submitted the application with 14 countries committed financially to DISCO back then. So I'm very, very positive about this process. But the transition from the institutional funding to the national level funding is not an easy one. And the Commission realizes this, and this is why they provide this bridge funding, basically, which is the projects that I just described, ensuring that you have a smooth transition from whatever financial model you had before into the most permanent national-level funding model that all the European research infrastructures have. So, of course, DISCO is not there to just build a silo of collections. On the contrary, it's there to provide interfaces of collections. And it's important also to understand how these interfaces work. The first thing I will say is that DISCO, of course, builds on our network. There is a network of collections, CITAF, and this network is extremely important on how we share ideas around the needs of our museums, not only in terms of the data, but across all the portfolio of activities of a museum, from public engagement to training to local interventions for the community and so on. So CITAF is our underpinning community. We, of course, see a huge area of interaction with European research infrastructures, and we already have established some technical and strategic interfaces with infrastructures like LifeWatch. With Elixir, we're doing a lot of work now. We're now proceeding with a big project on ensuring link between collections and sequences from ENA. And this is very, very important. So this is a very big path of collaboration for us with the European research infrastructures. At global level, of course, GBIF is our immediate collaborator in that. And at regional level, we would like to see also, and we are working on this, collaboration with similar initiatives across regions that really try to leverage the value of collections, for instance, IDIC Bio in the US, and so on and so forth. And finally, but definitely not less important, is the European Open Science Cloud. This is basically the technical underpinnings of the research infrastructures. But I would like to say something which I think is very, I don't know how many of you are following the, at least the European Union's priorities on science and society, but the European Union has a new president, von der Leyen, and she laid out the other day the two biggest priorities for her presidency over the next 5 years. Number one priority, the new European Green Deal. Number two priority, the European Open Science Cloud. Now, think where infrastructures like DISCO sit, exactly in the middle. So this is a huge opportunity, not only from the perspective of our museums and the maturity of our museums, but also from the political environment in which now we find ourselves. And we need to take advantage of this. And of course, in all of that, it is important to see how the national nodes of DISCO gradually develop, how they organize themselves, what kind of affinities and links they develop at national level with other infrastructures or other nodes of infrastructures. And I presume that this is one of the topics for the day. You will excuse me that I didn't drill into that, but I'm very happy to discuss it. And I hope it was not very, very boring. A bit boring is okay. So, yeah, thank you very much.